Good morning. One of our finest jockeys of bygone years, Bob Skelton, passed away in August of this year. Bob was a champion jockey and a champion person. And in late January of 2016, I spoke with Bob on This Is Your Racing Life. At the time, Bob was facing a battle with cancer.
It's impossible almost to pick these horses out into the straight. Happy Union's just in front of Summer Hay. Reckless the outside, and I think it's Golden Black moving up on the outside to tackle them. Vanderhum is starting to run on, and then Tara's Regent. It's Happy Union in front of the 400 from Summer Hay, and Reckless coming down the outside now. It's Vanderhum. Vanderhum and Golden Black out after the leaders. Vanderhum's moved up now with Golden Black, and they're fighting the cup out. Vanderhum's taken a narrow lead from Golden Black, Reckless and Happy Union, and now it's 100 to go. It's Vanderhum in front in the Melbourne Cup. The Mudlark's got it won, and Vanderhum draws away to win a length and a half to Golden Black.
Well, good morning, everyone. That was Vanderhum winning the Melbourne Cup. We'll never forget that 1976, the only time that the Cup looked as though it may be called off on the day. The storm that hit Flemington, we'll never forget it. It was amazing. And ploughing through the mud some 40 years ago this Cup day this year, aboard Vanderhum was one of the great jockeys from New Zealand who made Australia his home so successfully, and Bob Skelton. How are you doing, Bob?
Wonderful, Brian. Going through a little bit of a flat spot at the moment, but it's just another challenge that we've got to work through.
Well, you've answered all the challenges in your life now. That particular day, I remember with Vanderhum, he arrived here for the Cups. He arrived here, I reckon, the night before the Herbert Power on a delayed flight.
It was unbelievable. The horse arrived here practically midnight, or 1 o'clock, the same day was due to race at 3 o'clock that afternoon. And the float was going to continue on out to Mount Martha. And the float driver said, well, you know, wouldn't you be better to stay here at Caulfield overnight instead of having to come an hour and a half back into the races a few hours later? And they decided to do that, and that's how it all revolved.
And Vanderhum arrived on a plane that sort of was reminiscent of Noah's Ark. It had everything on it.
It was a scream, that's right. It was everything on it, you know. But you've got to know the characters in this. The owners were owner trainers, farmers, you name it, the works. And it was nothing for them to put a horse on afloat and go from the top of the New Zealand to the bottom of New Zealand to race at steeplechase meetings at Riverton or the Grand National at Christchurch. And they just think nothing of it. And putting a horse on a plane for 3 hours, Brian, that was just a walk in the park.
And this plane had chickens and goats and vegetables and thoroughbred racehorses aboard.
Exactly. So you could imagine. But they could adapt. I wouldn't say every horse could probably adapt to those circumstances, but those horses could, because they were farmed virtually more or less with all that sort of stuff.
He didn't get to Mud the Peninsula that night because it was going to take too long, so he bunkered down at Caulfield, and within sort of 4 or 5 hours, he's getting ready to run in the Herbert Power, and he came out, and you were aboard, and he cantered home by 7 or 8 lengths.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how it all revolved, Brian, because I was coming over to ride another horse called Suleiman, and Maureen, my wife, said to me, why don't you ring up the Robinsons and see who's riding Vanderhum in the Herbert Power? And I said, oh, no, they'll have a rider. But anyway, she wouldn't relent, Brian. She was persistent. So I eventually ring, and they said, well, look, we've just spoke to Roy Higgins. But, Bob, if he's not available, we'd love you to ride the horse, you know. And that's how it transpired. But, so he went on into the Herbert Power, on a wet track, mud track. And what you got to realise, Vanderhum raced that four-year-old career. He started off his four-year-old career, raced all through the winter, mud up to the knees over there. So there wouldn't have been a more seasoned horse than what Vanderhum was.
Herbert Power was an easy win the following Saturday, Caulfield Cup Day, but he bumped into a very good mare who was weighted to win in How Now, but he ran well, he ran third.
Oh, that was in the Caulfield. That was in the Caulfield Cup, yes. We'll see. I couldn't ride him in the Caulfield because I'm on the horse that I was coming over to ride, Suleiman. But Brent Thompson took the ride and considered him unlucky.
Following Saturday, they ran him third week in a row on the Cox Plate, won by the champion filly Surround.
Yes. Now, that's a certain circumstances there because he raced in the Cox Plate and he pulled up a very distressed horse, Brian. Pulled up a very distressed horse. There's two of them really in trouble because Battle Heights had his hind heels bandaged because he was getting down on his heels. And they both finished together in the Cox Plate. And Vanderhum pulled up very distressed. And I was very, very concerned about it. And this is where two heads are better than one, Brian, even if they're only fish heads, you know. And this is what we sat down and we discussed it. I said, now, Leo, look, they blow for two reasons. They're either on the way up or on the way down. I said, this horse, it wouldn't be a fitter horse going into a Melbourne Cup than what this horse would be, you know. So we decided to back off because he wanted to run him in the Dalgety. He wanted to run him in the Dalgety, and I thought, well, that's the last thing he wants, you know. So we just come back on his work. And then on the Sunday, Brian, he galloped with Kai Thera, and Kai Thera beat him by 10 lengths. I annihilated him. And I'm coming back in, smiling, had a grin on my face, and he said, what are you so happy about? I said, Brian, I said, listen, I said, all we need is rain. I said, he's pulled up, look at him. I said, you wouldn't blow a candle out and not a mark on him. I said, you couldn't get a fitter horse going into a Melbourne Cup. I said, we just need rain. And we prayed for rain, Brian.
And you got it.
We had all the nurses and nuns and everyone praying for us. I went to mass, the racing mass on the Sunday, and oh, by Joe, so miracles sometimes are a bit slow in coming, but they can come, you know.
Well, Melbourne Cup Day in 1976, it dawned a nice, bright, clear, sunny morning. There was no sign of rain. But what happened? It was a half an hour before the race. It was scheduled for 2:40, and I reckon it started at about 2:10, that close to the race. And I've never seen a storm like what hit Flemington that day. How did you feel about that?
It was just unbelievable. I mean, it was a bit frightening, a bit scary, because I don't know whether there was two phenomenons that year. Was that the total eclipse at Moonee Valley well? Yeah. It come to Moonee Valley, and next minute all the come crew and all the birds was going to roost, and then next minute all come. Well, you know, it was eerie because you could not see from the winning from the mounting yard or the jockey's room to the winning post. And that's how it was. And all of a sudden, this cloud came over and hovered over Flemington and was just waiting to let down. And all of a sudden, the heavens opened wide. I've never seen rain like it. And it was frightening because the thunder, was deafening, and lightning just lit up the sky. And I thought, how can they possibly? Mind you, prior to that, I'm dancing and jigging all sorts of things, grinning like a Cheshire cat. Because I thought, well, they can't beat them, you know. But then I think, well, how can they run this race? How can they possibly run this race the way the track was? Because the track was just running brook with right across the course proper.
The images that day, we had pools of water and lakes actually gathering on the lawns. In the betting ring, I think it was a metre deep, the rain, and they made sort of makeshift bridges out of chairs to get across to the bookies. There were guys and gals dressed up in amazing costumes, the cavalcade of costumes we see on Cup Day, but I can still remember seeing a bloke with little or nothing on, but he had a snorkel and flippers. He was diving into the lakes that were forming on the lawns. It was extraordinary, but they called you in the jockey's room and they said, yep, we put the race back. I think they jumped, instead of them jumping at 2:40, they jumped at 2:47. So tell us about the race, the Melbourne Cup.
Just going back before that, Maureen was up in the stand with her friends and that, and all the spoutings, the water just couldn't take. And they're sitting in these seats, and all of a sudden this flood of water just came right through the whole grandstands and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So that's another example of how the circumstances were.
Now, you drew 24 at the gate.
Brian, look, the steward come in and said, righto, boys, mount up, straight to the start, no preliminaries. 24 at the gate, Brian. Jumped reasonable, dropped over and behind them. I was about third or fourth last coming down the straight to the winning post. I'd had three, four sets of goggles on, and I'd only gone 100 yards or so in a slosh. Had to pull those down because I didn't have any windscreen wipers. And then continued to pull them down. By the time I got to the winning post, they were useless. There was no help to me at all. Got a terrible scare too going out of the straight because a horse called Battle Heights, who I considered was a big danger because he was a great mudder, had been bandaged behind because of his getting down on his heels. Had been bandaged behind and they'd started to unravel. And Battle Heights came round me and cut me a little short, and Vander must have caught one of the streamers, one of the bandages, and nearly pulled his legs from under him. How he didn't fall, I don't know. And, of course, you can imagine how I was feeling. I mean, I can't see. I'm riding blind, as the rest of the jockeys were. But then knowing Flemington, I thought, well, I'm getting out of this. I'm going to take evasive action. And the moment I got round into the back there, into 2,000 metres, it's a complete straight run along the side there. So I pulled out. And here I am out in the middle of the track, Brian, lonesome, all on my own, looking in. And Brian, how those horses and jockeys managed in there, because it was just a sea of mud. You could not distinguish any horse or colours or horses whatsoever. Only thing I could pick out was the style of the New Zealand riders, Brian Andrews and Gary Willits and different ones. I could sort of follow them, you know. But that was it, yeah.
And he kept going. Once you got him out to the better ground, he got his footing, got into his rhythm?
Oh, he was just revelling. He was just revelling in the conditions. And his stride just got longer and longer and longer. And he just continued to improve. And he passing horse after horse. And coming to the 800, the Rory travelled a mile and a half. The whole track just, the whole field just seemed to concertina, just seemed to stop because the front non-stars just collapsed in front of them and caused a tremendous schmozzle. But I'm out in the middle of the track, and next minute I must have made about six lengths on him without any trouble at all, without even moving. So he just continued to improve. His stride got stronger and stronger and lengthened. And only in one part of it I got a bit of a shock. Because I challenged Bart Cummings' horse, Golden Black, and each challenge he fought back and came with me for about 100 yards or more. But Vanderham, being such a great stayer and revelling in the conditions, drew away to win the 1976 Melbourne Cup.
And he ran 3:34-something. It was slower than the Cup Day hurdle, the first race on the same day, and the slowest Melbourne Cup I think ever run.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And those images of you coming back to scale, you could just see your eyes, and that's about all. Bill Collins, the great broadcaster, said only Bob Skelton's mother would recognise him.
That'd be right. That'd be sure. I've got pictures to prove that, boy.
So how did you feel? You won the Cup, and it's nearly 40 years this year, every rider's dream.
Brian, elated. I was elated. It was just a tremendous feeling for horse and rider. A horse and rider, Brian. Because the horse, you know, they're an amazing thing, the thoroughbred, because they know when they've won, and they get that feeling because the rider passed it on to the horse, you know. But no, the elation in that. But you've got no idea how I felt. I was practically. How would I describe it? I was so weak, Brian. After, yeah, because I weighed out about correct weight, and I came in about over 7 pounds, what I mean, more than that, 7 pounds more than weight. So the whole saddle and everything was just completely soaked, you know. And my feeling, I had no feeling in my arms or my legs. Or anything. I just felt like jelly. That was the exhausting part of riding in the conditions on the day, you know.
That was Vanderhum winning the Melbourne Cup. We're with Bob Skelton, the great jockey. We're taking a word and we'll be back. This is your racing life. For Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives and a great life, Bobby Skelton. We're with Bob Skelton this morning here on 1116 SEN. Now, Bob, we spoke about that Melbourne Cup. It's a cup we'll never forget. It's a long time ago. Starting out in racing, you're part of an amazing family, five boys and four girls, nine children, from a little mining town called Cobden in New Zealand. And the five brothers all were jockeys. There was Bill, Errol, Frank, Bob and Max.
Bill, Frank, Bob, Errol and Max.
That's a racing order.
Yeah.
Now, Bill was an icon. He was first to, he won everything in New Zealand. He won the premiership multiple times. But in the early 50s, he was coming over and riding. I think he first rode in, he rode in Melbourne, he rode in Sydney and did very well.
Darrell's Joy Derby and Derby in the Cox Plate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Darrell's Joy.
You came across in 1954 and you came to Australia and you rode a horse called Lancaster.
Oh, now you're going back. Lancaster. Yeah, Lancaster actually, as a matter of fact, Brian, they asked me to ride Lancaster because I'd run second in the New Zealand Cup to Gold Scheme, second to him in the Wellington, second in the Wellington Cup, and won the Chalmers Handicap over 2 mile in Australasian record time. And they asked me to come over and ride him, and I'm just still under, I'd just come out of military training as an 18-year-old, you know. And they asked me to come over and ride him. I said, oh, I said, aren't you sending a boy in a man's errand? I said, because, you know, the Australian jockey at that time had been right throughout the racing world and won all the premier races. And here's a kid, little kid from Cobden, coming over to compete against these guys, you know. And I thought it was a little bit, but I thought, well, I've got it. If they've got that much confidence in me, why am I to complain, you know? So anyway, we accepted it. And we came over on a Sunderland flying boat, believe it or not. I think it was Teal, T-E-A-L, Teal. And I'm not sure, but it took us roughly around about 7 or 8 hours, you know. And we took off in Wellington, and there had to be, the first takeoff had to be aborted because it was chopping up a bit rough. So they aborted the first takeoff, and then we finally got into the air and landed at Rose Bay in Sydney, yeah. And went out to Hawkesbury, actually. We were there at Hawkesbury.
What about starting out as an apprentice? You come from a mining town, Cobden, and so many of the people that were in the town all worked in the mines, in the coal mines. So were you heading in that direction? Or when did you make the decision to try and have a crack at racing?
I was terrified going down a coal mine, you know, but all my mates, all my friends and their fathers and fathers before them were all coal miners. They went into the coal mines at 14 years of age, Brian. And you got to really realise in Cobden, Greymouth, there was no work. If you wanted work, you had to go over to the East Coast to Christchurch or somewhere else out at to get employment, to get work, you see. And it was the late Jack O'Donnell's father that got us into the racing scene. And he was on the Grey River Argus on the newspaper there, and a trainer came over from the East Coast, from Timaru, and looking for a likely-looking lad. And, of course, he straight away said, no, exactly the right fella for you, Bill Skelton, he's the boy. And that's where it all started.
So you always wanted to follow the older brother, Bill?
Big man?
You wanted to follow Bill, your brother?
Well, I was a bit of a mum's boy. I chickened out as a bit of a mum's boy. And Faye said to me, don't you go, Bob, don't you? Because Faye and I got on pretty well together. I'm going over to her 80th birthday, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. But anyway, she said, oh, don't you go, Bob, don't you go. And Frank says, I said, I'll go. So he filled the breach straight away, you know. then the following year, the same train was that what Bill came to, came back. And so knowing that Bill was in the stable, I thought, no, that'll do. I'll go with Big Brother Bill.
Did you learn to ride on those pit ponies?
Oh, that's a scream, that is. You know, these little ponies, they'd be under the ground for 12 months or more, and the majority would come out and they'd be blind, Brian. But they'd come out on over the Christmas period onto different farms and that, and this particular one didn't go back into the mine. So, you know, so the farmer says to me, how would you like a pony to ride? Well, all my dreams had come true. And there was a great old film at the time that my friend Flicker was on, you know, and of course, you know, I've had dreamed about this. So anyway, the farmer said, well, righto, no saddle or anything, just a bridle, bareback. And he said, well, go on, get on your pony. Got on it, Brian, and it just dropped me flat on my back. And he said, well, don't you want to ride? Get on your pony. So I got on it, and I continued to get on it, and it just dropped me straight on my back. In the finish, it gave up. It said, well, what's the point? He's only going to get back on again. So what's the moral of the story? Determination, perseverance, and, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try and try and try again.
How very true. And it took you, so you got an apprenticeship down in Timaru, and it took you 12 rides to get home, and your first race you won, but you won it in the steward's room at a house called Air Mine.
Well, that's hilarious, really. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, Junior Morrissey comes up to me before the race. I was an old school cobber of mine. And said, I'm going to ride my first winner today. I said, oh, is that right? He said, yeah, final cast. I said, you got to beat me. I said, I don't think you can beat me. Oh, come on, you've got no hope. Well, he'd drawn the outside, and I'd drawn an inside gate. And as soon as he jumped, he pulled the left rein and come straight across in front of us. How it stood up, I don't know, Brian. But it was one. His horse was won by about six lengths, you know, coast. Now, and over there, they've got a thing, if they see any discrepancy or anything, the siren goes, you see. All right, siren goes, okay, inquiry will proceed, hold all tickets. So straight away, they take the race off final cast and they give it to Airmine. So I'm second past the post and promoted to winning.
This is your first winner?
Yeah. So that's my first winning ride, you see. And I thought, that's a bit of a rocky stuff. So the next day, they take poor old Junior off and replace him with a senior rider, Ned Thistle. And I'm in front on the rail, and final cast is outside me. And come to the corner, I veer off at the corner, finish up under the stands, the winning pace at the bottom of the straight, you see. Siren goes again. Hold all tickets, and inquiry will proceed. Relegated. So they take the race off Air Mine, and they give it to final cast.
Same two horses.
What a rocky start, Brian.
Same two horses within 24 hours.
Yes.
Now, the trips across to Australia, you came with a very good stayer called Ark Royal in 1956. He got beaten in a couple of Wait for Age races in the spring in Melbourne. And the press, particularly Jack Elliott, the chief writer for the Melbourne Herald, the press were relentless in their criticism of you.
Brian, that seemed to be an era that they were going through at that point in time. And Jack said to me, he said, Bob, the pen is mightier than the sword, you know. And, of course, Jack was very critical of my... And, of course, I brought a lot on myself, Brian, because I wasn't a vigorous rider. I was a lazy rider in some ways. But there's two methods of getting the best out of a horse, and that's by punishing with the whip, or coaxing, and understanding, and you know, in communication with a horse. And I found that I succeeded more with coaxing and riding a horse gently than I did with punishing a horse. You know, Bill was the opposite. Bill was a very, very persuasive rider, you know, the enforcer, you know. But this was it. And I left myself open so many times because if I felt a horse was doing its best, Brian, was giving its best, and there's no greater feeling to feel and know and understand that horse wants to win for you, because you both, working for the same end, you see. And I was reluctant to pull the stick on a horse that was giving me its level best, you see. And it's like a child, you know. I mean, some child and some horse are different. Some child you can belt the daylights out of them and they wouldn't turn a hair. Another child, you know, a harsh word. And well, horses are the same. Horses do the same.
Now, Ark Royal figured and has a place in history, of course, was in the Triple Dead Heat and the Hotham Handicap. They'd taken you off, and Ark Royal, Pandy Son and Fighting Force. Triple Dead Heat on the Hotham on Derby Day. Ark Royal was then set to run in the Melbourne Cup, but he misbehaved in the float going there and didn't make the race.
Yes, well, of course, by that time I was back in New Zealand, Brian. But prior to that, Brian, his trainer, and that were very, very close. The trainer on the horse, Ark Royal, was very close. And actually liked to have a beer or two, and he'd come home after, and he'd go in and make sure that Ark Royal was all right, and he'd put his arms around him and talk to him and one thing and another. And then this particular time, Ark Royal savaged him, you know, because he was an entire. But the horse wasn't well, Brian. The horse wasn't well. He was a sick horse at the time. And when you look at his record, he did a mighty job getting beat by a horse called Sailor's Guide. And I was told on that particular, on no circumstances was I to pull the whip on him, because he hadn't settled in well. He was like a child away from home for the first time. He wouldn't drink the water. He wouldn't eat the feed. So lack of dehydration and lack of condition, lack of form, you know. And this was what was happening to Ark Royal. And he just got worse and worse. But to be beaten by Sailor's Guide and Pushover and Ray Ribbon and the horses that beat him, they were top of the range.
Your first ride in the Melbourne Cup was 1963, and it was a great staying horse called the Lunk.
He was a great horse too, Brian. He'd already won the Caulfield Cup 2 years previous, I think, and ran second in the Melbourne Cup. And they weren't happy with the ride or something at the time. That's why I was asked to come over and ride him in the Melbourne Cup of 63. But in the meantime, he'd been taken out for a walk, and there's a terrorist at Flemington there, and he got a fright and got a shock, and he fell down from one terrace to the next, one level to the next, and injured his back. And he never really completely... never completely recovered from it, and he was always on medication even to try and help him, you know.
And he still ran such a great race. I think he carried 8.12 and gave nearly a stone to get him that year.
Brian, the morning of the races, we went down to take him out for his normal exercise, and he couldn't move. He was completely seized up. And Eric Roper, the trainer, said, oh, well, it looks like he can't run in the cup, you know. I can remember Sir Alistair Williams giving Maureen £50 to go and buy herself a hat. He says, it doesn't look like we're going to race. And anyway, we go back after breakfast, and here he is walking around quite good. So we took him out, give him a bit of a warm-up and one another, and he was great. He got his goal, so he took his place in the 63 Melbourne Cup.
And ran such a great race.
Well, Brian, he was one of the tail enders. One of the tail enders, he raced back tail enders, and coming to the half mile, it was great chamois. All the non-starters were coming back, and horses were going up and getting in all sorts of strife. And I just took a vase of action and pulled outside them, and within half a furlong, I've gone from 20 lengths behind them, 15, 20 lengths behind them, to within about 3 or 4 lengths of get 'em. And I'm just sitting there smoking my pipe going, well, how can they beat this horse, you know? And I thought, well, you know, knowing Flemington, it's a 3 furlong run home, there's no rush and no hurry. So I just held him up and just let him freewheel and get to the clock down. I thought, well, it's time I started to move. I'll give him a bit of a click up. Couldn't change gear. Couldn't change gear. Nothing was happening. Nothing happened in the last 100 yards. I don't know whether somebody hit him with a shanghai or what, Brian, but no, all of a sudden he just found another gear, and he finished up in the second plot. To get them, So who knows, Brian? Should I have kept them rolling?
We'll never know. We're talking with Bobby Skelton, a great racing life, and we're back after this break with more of Bobby's story. Bob Skelton's with us this morning on This Is Your Racing Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Gee, Bob, I don't know. Look at your record here. 20 winners at 3,200 metres. That has to be a record, the old 2 miles. And overseas, you're a great ambassador for New Zealand particularly. Represented New Zealand in international races in South Africa in 69 and 70. Had placings. You rode in California, the USA, at Hollywood Park and at Santa Anita. And you had placings there. What a great experience.
Oh, Brian, look, it was, you see, and what you got to remember is when in Rome do what the Romans do, you know, they're all saying, oh, gee, you'll kill them over there, look, they all race with, you could put a horse and dray between each horse over there, you know, but Brian, you see, what you've got to remember is that over there they flatten those sand tracks out completely, and with all these big machines on them, they know exactly where the hardest, firmest part of those tracks are. They follow those wheel marks, and they make sure that they're there. So, you know, there's plenty of room in between, but it's heavier and slower ground. Mm. You know, it took me a while to wake up to that, but, you know, it happened.
How'd you go there?
Look, I had a wonderful time there, really. It was a great experience, Brian. It did. You know, the first ride I came over for, because I came over to ride a mare called Fairfleet, which was one of the greats, because she won from 6 furlongs to 2 mile. And the first ride, they get me over from New Zealand to ride her in a 1,200 metre race. And she just won the Chalmers handicap and Australasian record time over a mile and a half.
So you're in?
No, over 2 mile.
So you're over, this is in the US and you're on a dirt track.
Yeah, and I'm riding on these dirt tracks at Santa Anita. And she's come from, and you see, over there with those dirt tracks, you get all that backwash coming at you all the time. And New Zealand horses not used to that. They race on grass, and they're not used to all that coming. And I can remember this day I'm on her, and she's getting all this flack, and she's not galloping. She's not letting down at all. And next thing, they come to the corner, and I pulled hard into the inside rail, and the flat was going further out. Well, she sneaked right up. I got beat half a head over 1,200 metres, and she just come out of a 2 mile race. So she was phenomenal, and I was a wee bit stiff because I rode a horse called Pacific Cross there. And going to the start, the attendant that leads your horses to the start said, oh, you're not going today. I said, what do you mean not going? He said, oh, they've tied your tongue over the bit. And I said, you're kidding, aren't you? And he, no, I'm kidding. I said, well, you know, fix it up, will you? Fix it. Oh, not me, he said. No, he wasn't going to have a bar of that. I was going to report it to the start of it. I thought, oh, well. But knowing when you got a horse with it, as long as you don't pull the bit up too much in their mouth, and as long as you give them a bit of freedom with the bit, you can often get away with it sometimes, you know. Me being a loose rein rider, that's what I did. Well, she got beat half-head, Brian. And I'm going to ride her a next start. They were very keen for me to ride her a next start. But Fairfleet finished up in the same race. And I got beat by half a head. But, you know, that's the way things go.
A great career, 2,129 winners. And the champion horses, now we didn't see Great Sensation, who arguably was one of the best stayers ever in New Zealand, won 3 Wellington Cups, raced to a grand old age. He didn't come to Australia.
And that was my fault, Brian, because I'd been coming over with the best horses out of New Zealand at the time, and they weren't acclimatising, they weren't settling in, and the horses that had come over to ride were running against horses that I'd beaten in New Zealand many a time, and the horse that I was riding was 3 or 4 lengths better than, and they were winning, and I was running out the back, you know. So they didn't come to form, and that's exactly what I said to Mick Brown. He'd been offered a free trip over, all expenses paid, to bring the horse over, and I said, well, Mick, if you take him over, I'll be with you all the way. I said, but there's no guarantee No guarantee, I said, hold his form in Australia. And you've got to realise he was an owner-trained horse, so he's paddock-trained, had freedom and all the rest of it. Whereas he'd come to Australia, he'd be in a 12x12 loose box most of the day, and unless you took him out for walks and things, you know. But he would. And the only time he left the South Island was a three times or four times, I think, because he had three wins in a... and a third in the Wellington Cup. I didn't ride him in his first one, you know.
One of the best sprinter milers was Grey Way in New Zealand.
Remarkable. An amazing horse. He had a club foot, Brian, and I can still remember. I was at the race this day, and he was in the visitor's handicap. He'd already won it twice. And he had a club foot. And the fella, the strapper, was hobbling around as well. And I'd just recovered from a broken leg. And these people, I couldn't help but hear their remark, oh, look at Grey Way. Poor horse, he's lame. He shouldn't be running. And the jockey doesn't look much better either, they said, you know. Well, he finished up, never ridden a horse like him. He'd go into a starting gate and he'd pump himself up and he'd 10 foot tall. Never rode a horse that could begin as well as him. Bang, out of the gate. They've run, done better than 21. 21 for 1,400 metres. It was just remarkable, you know, a remarkable gallop. And he won about 54 races, you know, amazing.
And what about the sprinter, Shifnal Chief and Lilt, horses like that?
Good, yeah, you're getting in. Well, Shifnal Chief, I only rode him. I think I only rode him the once. I only rode him the once at Ellerslie in the railway. Was it the railway? Railway handicap at Ellerslie. And he drew on the outside. And in those days, you couldn't win from the outside barrier at Thingwajig. So I said, well, no good trying to head him off from outside. So I just dropped across in front of them, Brian, and just smoked me pipe as we were going through the race. And next minute, everything unfolded in front of me. He's got the last crack at them. He carried something like 9 stone 7 or something, you know, tremendous weight. And he's got up and won it. You know, he's got up and won it. Lilt, well, she was the same. She started from the outside gate at Dulles. But she was a very brilliant mare. Very brilliant. One of the best mares that I rode. Yeah. But there's so many, Brian. There's so many. Mayo Gold, Cheryl Lee. Oh, gosh. Starbell was... She won the triple crown. She was probably one of the best three-year-olds I've ever ridden.
And Magistrate, what a champion stayer he was, Magistrate. He ran in the Melbourne Cups. He ran fourth one year, but he won two Perth Cups. I think he won two Werribee Cups, a Maui Cup, beat Family of Man, a Bendigo Cup. And I think you'd actually turned 50 when he won his second cup over there in WA. And he might have been 10 or 11 years of age.
That'd be right. He was a larrikin, Brian. Yeah. Oh, he was a feeding him larrikin, you know. He did it. He was a bit like Frank Sinatra. I'll do it my way, you know. And I tried to get on top of him one time. I tried to get on top of him. I said, no, listen, mate. Yeah, come on. I changed my mind smartly because I wasn't going to win. I wasn't going to win. And this particular day at Drury, when one of the Werribee Cups, he's walking around, and all of a sudden a gate appears in front of him. And he pulled the reins out of my hand and just walked straight into the starting gate. And I said to the assistant, I said, look, shut up. And thankfully, it was the right gate. But the guy rushes up to shut the gate, and next minute he's let go with both barrels, Brian. Well, it just fired this attendant right across and laid him out cold. And then another time at Caulfield, a lady was late into the mounting yard, and she rushed across just behind him, and she had the handbag on the arm. It finished up across the other side of the birdcage as well. How she didn't get her head kicked off, I wouldn't. You know, but that's the sort of horse he was. He had to do it his way.
Yeah. You made Australia...
I think that's what made him so good, Brian. He was such a, you know... determined blighter.
You found that a lot of these horses, you know, with that fiery nature, Sunline's one that comes to mind, and, you know, they had this sort of this win-at-all-cost type of nature. They weren't happy around people, but they were just born thoroughbreds and were so good.
Exactly. Mm. You know, that's so true, Brian. Yeah.
And Bob, you came to Australia to call Australia home, as they say, and you went to Mornington. So many Kiwis all gathered down there at Mornington, from Theo Howe to Jack McGreal and all the jumping jockeys. You all gathered down there. It was like another part of New Zealand, wasn't it?
Little New Zealand. Yeah. Yeah, they call it Little New Zealand. That's so true. Yeah. I don't think there's so many there now, Brian. I think a lot of them are going up to Ballarat, up around that area now.
That'd be right. And you teamed up with Jack McGreal, who's one of our top trainers in Victoria at the time. And I remember some of those wonderful horses, Crepelox and King Delamere. Oh,
Crepelox, what an amazing little gallop he was. You know, when I first came over, Brian, they'd just done the Sandown track. And you, as you know, you couldn't win on the inside. You had to come down the middle of the track or the outside fence, you know. And I won three straight on little Crepelox, you know. Because I was revelled in the conditions, you know. And straight out the outside there, straight down there, oh, one untested. It's a great feeling, Brian.
I can imagine, Bobby. And you had a couple of croppers. You broke your leg twice. One day, I remember, at Moonee Valley.
Yeah, I did, Brian. You know, the first one was at in New Zealand. First one was in New Zealand, and the other one was at Moonee Valley. And it was quite a simple fall, the one at Moonee Valley, because I was thrown clear, Brian, thrown clear and no problems whatsoever. And I probably won't mention anybody's names, but this young fella hadn't had too many rides, and he'd been out the back about three or four lengths behind us all, and comes clip-clopping around behind us and straight over top me. And my horse was just starting to get to its feet, and he's barreled straight into it, and its neck come straight down onto the right leg and just snapped the leg right off. But it recovered. I was out for about 18 months with that, and then that's what I say, I came back after that and rode Rising Fear for second in the 86 Melbourne Cup.
That was 14 rides in the Melbourne Cup, and 86, you went very close behind Italic, didn't you, on Rising Fear?
Oh, hey, that look, I can remember every inch of the race, Brian, every inch of the way, because I knew Italic was the one, you see. And going out of the straight, the pace had really slackened right off, and I'm saying to myself, now this is no good, they're dictating the pace, they're making the rules, that's no good to me, I'm on a down. Two miler, a plodding 2 miler. No way I'm going to start sprinting them home if they run home the last half. So I immediately got into the back straight, good run home, just gradually let him stroll up to the leaders, and I stroll up beside Brent Thompson, and he's got his horses, got his feet between its ears, trying to slow the pace and slacken the pace and try to get some cover. And nothing would go round him. Nothing would go round him to give him any cover. And I come up beside him and just squat beside him as well. And he'd be, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, don't just sit there. You want to go to the front, go to the front. Go, you know, you carry on, go to the front. I said, no. The pace is just nice, Brent. I said, you ride your horse and I'll ride mine, you know. And coming to the corner, I look over my shoulder and there's... Michael Clark on Atalak, and he's under double wraps, you know, he's just cruising, and I'm thinking, how can I flush him out? Because the sooner I flush him out, knowing Atalak, he was a brilliant horse, more of a weight for age than a 2 miler, I think if I can flush him out along Flemington Straight, he's going to come to the end of it, and my fella's going to be keep coming on. But no, he was too weak. He woke up to me, you see. He just sat. And then when he went past me, he shaved me a wee bit, but I only beat me by half a length. I was still coming.
That was 86, and your last ride, I think, was on Rising Fear in the 87 Melbourne Cup. Was that?
It was a disappointing run, Brian, because his run in the Dalgety was good. His run in the Dalgety was good, but I don't think he was a terribly genuine sort of a horse, you know. He wasn't... because I rode him quite a bit after that in the Sydney Cup, and he didn't show much enthusiasm, you know.
35 years in the saddle by the time it was goodbye time to racing. How did you arrive at the decision to say, I've had enough?
I didn't. No way, I'd have been still riding. Maureen says to me, Bob, you're zigging when you should be zagging. And she said, you're hesitating, you know, and so forth. So she said, I think you've had your day, Bob. I think you've had your day. So I said, oh, well, fair enough. I regret it a little bit, Brian.
What age were you, Bob?
54. I regret it, although she was quite right. I was hesitating. I was riding defensively, you know.
Was there fear in that?
No. I wasn't frightened. It wasn't that at all. It was just the fact that I was riding too careful. I was looking after myself. I was riding too defensively. And that was it. So I thought, well, okay. But I regret it because I think I was still riding pretty well. Well, it showed that I'd run second in the Melbourne Cup the previous year, you know. Yeah. So I still tried to compete in the city, Brian. And I was only getting the leftover rides, the rides that nobody wanted, the rides that were just filling in. And they weren't doing me any good, you know. I should have really gone out the country and picked my rides. You know, I could have chose horses that I wanted to ride and so forth. But then again, you're riding the country, you're riding in a lot of trouble too, you see. So it was probably time, Brian.
Bob, you then took to training, as so many jockeys do. You didn't do it for very long.
Brian, I vowed and declared I'd never train horses. Because, you know, as a jockey, you say to him, you're coming on a horse and you're discussing with the trainer or the owner and saying, well, look, you know, the horse is a bit limited. I think you've got to place him to advantage or, you know, whatever or so forth, or he probably wants a shorter or longer distance. Or, you know, you try and give him a little bit of advice and say and so forth. But the jockey, he walks off the track, he goes home, polishes his gear and gets himself ready for the next one, finds a faster horse. But the trainer can't. He's got to take that horse home and he's got to scratch his head and think, how am I going to get this horse to run faster? And you can't get slow horses to run faster, Brian. I'm convinced. I'm convinced about that. Yeah.
When you look at today's riders, you're renowned particularly as a great staying rider, yet you had so much success over the shorter courses. And you're renowned for riding with that loose rein. And you explained it before about horses getting into their rhythm, horses being comfortable. It probably, from an outsider looking in, it looked different to the others.
Different, unorthodox, you name it, whatever. It's different, all right. But, Brian, I learned earlier in years, you see, horses have all have a different gait, different style, different sort of way they gallop. And I found that if I try to hold a horse together and sometimes balance it, it felt it was on the wrong leg. It was like riding driving a car with a flat tyre. And I found if I gave a horse a free rein, that he could adjust himself to what, you know. Now, whether you want to take that, but that was a theory. That was one of the theories that I had, you know. You know, although in saying that, you could still, the reins are like a telegraph line where you communicate to your horse and so forth. And see, I got into a lot of trouble because I used to neck rein a horse a lot. And funny, going back to America, I got no hope in riding America. And they said to me, hey, Kiwi, can you neck rein? Can you neck rein a horse? And I don't know what the hell he was talking about. I said, yeah, that's no problem. And it's just like those cowboys, you know, they don't pull left or right. No. They just use their wrist. Oh, yeah. Use their wrist to go this way, they use their wrist to go that way. And, of course, they'd been putting these American jocks on these horses and they couldn't steer the thing. It was running off the track with them all the time. Of course, I get it on, I just... wasn't any good, but, you know, done the job. And that was a thing with me that I would. And I'd use a horse with my knees instead of using the reins. You know, a touch on the left, a touch, like riding these motorbikes, you know, you're swinging. You know, I mean, and I wasn't touching their mouth at all. But you see, I mean, if you got to start steering, I mean, you're losing, the other way is a shortcut, isn't it?
Tell me, the five boys, the brothers, you and the four brothers, did you ever ride in the same race?
Oh, two or three times. Two or three times we did, yeah. And I laughed. We'd go back to the local meeting in Greymouth and Cobden, and all the fellas would come up and say to Dad, well, yes, Bill, right on, which one of the boys can win? Which one of the boys can win this race? Well, take your pick, he said. They've all told me that they think they can win. So Max, Errol, Bob, Bill, Frank, so take your pick. So you're back to square one, aren't you?
Well, someone won anyway.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah.
Great to catch up with you, Bobby Skelton. You turned 81 on the 28th of December last year. What about the health?
Brian, it's the end of an era. It's the end of an era. I've travelled extensively the last few years. I went over to Royal Ascot, with you.
Black Caviar.
When I was over there and saw Chantel, what's that other great horse that was over there?
Frankel.
Frankel. What a great horse Frankel was, you know. So I've travelled, been to Canada and been to the Stampede over there and so forth. And I've enjoyed my travels and so forth. So what's next, Brian? Depending on health, Brian. Depending on health, but I think I've got a few rivers to cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's it continue. I'll still enjoy my family's everything, Brian. You know, my family. I mean, I've just come back from New Zealand over in a place called just up past Whangarei, up past in Bay of Islands there, and my daughter's got a beach house there. I spent a week over there sunning myself, and I got a beautiful tan, Brian.
Beautiful. I can see that, yes. Yeah, beautiful.
And in the surf, swimming in the surf and all the rest of it and so forth. So, you know, I intend to spend as much time with the family as I can, because I just feel that you can't do without family.
And the health is a bit of a battle at the moment?
Not good, Brian. Not good. I'm on a down, you see, because way back in 2007, thereabouts, I had a bladder taken out. It was full of cancer. And there was always a possibility it could recur. And, Brian, it has recurred. I'm under chemotherapy at the present time. I go in for another session tomorrow, but I've got a few goals in mind. I've got a few winning posts to get to. I'd like to go over to my oldest daughter's 80th birthday in about the 10th of February, and then the Racing Hall of Fame, Brian's on at the same time, around about the 5th or 6th of February. So I don't know who the inductees are this time for the New Zealand Hall of Fame. But, of course, Bill and I are both in it.
Yeah. 2006 you're inducted.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Great to spend time with you, Bob. The most important thing is good health and look after yourself.
Well, look, Brian, it's always a challenge. Life's a challenge and so forth. So we'll just take a step at a time and just press on.
Bobby Skelton, champion jockey, my special guest on This Is Your Racing Life.